2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Phone lines are open, so you can ask us your questions right now. Give us a call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Our next texter, Ton, says, when do you recommend putting liquid fertilizer on the lawn?
Anytime you need a fertilization, the liquid fertilizers still supply nutrients, usually just nitrogen, but you may have others in there. And they work, when I say a little differently, it's not that they are absorbed by the plant roots or uptaken by the plant roots differently. It's just that because they're liquid, they're immediately available, to where a fertilizer granule takes a week or two to break down.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're going to get is an instant green up within a week or so. To our fertilizers, it's usually at least a couple of weeks. But with liquid fertilizers, the longevity is a lot shorter. And so if you spray a liquid fertilizer out, it'll green up more quickly. But within a month to 6 weeks, that fertilizer, the effect of the fertilizer will diminish, and you may need to redo it. Now, a liquid fertilizer is useful for if you have a wedding in a couple of weeks and you need to green up the lawn.
Right.
Or, you know, things like that. And there's people that have what you would call a fertigation system that will run in line in their irrigation, and they will just fill it with liquid fertilizer, and they will give the lawn a small dose every time the lawn's fertilized so that they don't are over fertilized, but the lawn's getting maintenance doses every time. So it's almost like using Miracle-Gro on your lawn once a week. So there are those systems out there, but if you're just using a liquid fertilizer, just do it in the morning or the evening, and it's never a bad time.
Is that good for someone who maybe let their lawn get too far, I want to say, yellowed during the heat?
Yes. What I would probably do, let's say you need to rejuvenate a lawn, and what I would do is water normally, but I would put a liquid fertilizer down, and then maybe 6 weeks later, follow up with a granular.
Okay. Next listener says, is it okay to put lawn fungicide under fruit trees?
They'll have to look at the label. The label will say, do not apply in the root zone of edible plants, or do not apply in areas where edibles are grown if there's restrictions, but it depends on the fungicide, and they'll just have to look at the label and see if it's restricted.
Okay. Next person says they saw some hardy hibiscus and impulse bought one. I impulse buy things all the time. Nothing wrong with that. So what does it need to survive out there in Bluffdale?
Plant it. And
plant it now. It's hot.
Yeah. And the hardy hibiscus, if you can put some compost around the roots, that will help. But I have a hardy hibiscus I didn't get planted last year,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that it had died. And I walked outside a month ago, and it had just been getting rainwater and some sprinkler water. And I'll be darned, that thing's 18 inches tall. They are very durable, so I just get them in the ground, and they'll be fine.
Next listener, I'm not sure I'm going to interpret this correctly. They say, how do I treat a cottonless cottonwood tree that looks like there are burls on the branches by the leaf stems? Burls?
There's nothing you can do about the burls. Though a burl.
What is a burl?
It's like a canker that grows.
Oh, okay.
And they can get pretty big. And so there are certain species of trees, and some species of cottonwood are among them, that people like carpenters will search for, and if they can find these big burls on a tree, they'll cut them and turn them into tabletops or clocks, if you've ever seen a piece of wood.
Because they're interesting, right?
The grain is very interesting, and it's usually harder wood than the regular trunk. And so these burls on box elder trees, on some species of cottonwood, and some species of maples are very sought after and can be, to the right people, sometimes valuable. Now, locally, there isn't a burl industry that I know of, but there are some local arborists that do have portable sawmills that will sometimes saw up trees. So, but
there's no way to trade it.
No, generally they're not fatal to the tree, and they're just there. There is a disease called crown gall that cottonwoods are susceptible to, that if you see it at the base of a tree, can eventually kill it. But you've got to treat the tree before you see it. And I can't remember the name of the product, but the crown gall is caused by bacteria, and you use the treatment is a competing bacteria, culture related, that will outcompete the other one, but it doesn't cause the burl. And you've got to do a soil drench before you see it in the trees for it to be effective.
But this is by the leaf stem, so that's probably not that.
You can almost consider it a cancerous growth on the tree that if it does harm, it's usually years and years down the road. But there's really not much they can do.
Okay. Alan is in Taylorsville. Good morning, Alan. What is your question?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate you guys, and I like listening to the things you have to say. By the way, on a side note, I would love to have some burl. So there you go.
There you go, because they're interesting.
I have two, they call them black roses, but they're just a really dark rose bushes that I planted years ago. And I transplanted one of them, and when I moved it, where I dug it up, I'm getting volunteer rose something or other. They're thorny, but they don't look like the same stem. So I'm assuming it's the graft, the black roses are graft. Is that right?
Yeah, they probably are grafted. And what you have coming up is the rootstock, and they will form big bushes that bloom once a year and will probably have a pretty simple rose on it. And so unless you want 10 to 12 foot rose bushes that are super thorny, I would go ahead and get rid of them.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you very much. I do appreciate that. But I know that there are people here in Utah that would love to have some burl, by the way.
Yeah, it's just more, I don't know of businesses actively seeking trees to cut them. And if they are, it's like the garage shop type guys
right.
that have the portable mills.
Right.
And I know that in other areas of the country, up in the Northwest and Alaska, if you can find these burls on certain species, there is an industry. I haven't heard of a commercial one locally.
Alan, thanks so much for your call this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. I got a text from my son earlier this week, and he sent me a picture of a very interesting looking bug on his brick on his house and said, "What are these? They're everywhere." And I showed it to you.
Well, I was proud. You identified it on your own.
It was
elm seed bug.
Mm-hmm.
And the elm seed bug is one that is becoming like the summer's version of box elder bugs. So
just a plain nuisance.
Yes, we have back in the day. And my timing may be a little off on the history, but 1910s, 1920s, 1900, we planted Siberian elms because mm-hmm. it was assumed that our climate was so harsh that not many trees would grow here. And so we planted cottonwoods, catalpas, Siberian elms, box elders, and which now were considered less desirable trees. And so the Siberian elm produces thousands of seeds per mature tree, and they drop. And then if you have them in the neighborhood, they come up anywhere and everywhere. And you get these weedy elm trees coming up in the lawns. Now, there are many species of elm that are very good trees for Utah, and we need to differentiate, just because I've used this analogy in the past. If all the other elm trees were Jimmy Carter, the Siberian elm would be Billy Carter. So that's a joke that you have to be of a certain age to understand.
Oh my. Okay.
So the Siberian elms produce all these seeds, and the elm seed bug is an imported pest that's more of a nuisance, but you can get hundreds to thousands of them congregating during the summer on the south and west sides of homes. And if your home isn't totally sealed up, they'll crawl through the foundation, under the window seals and things like that, and get into your home. And the best course of action is to put a little bit of water in a shop vac with soap in it and then vacuum them out of the house. And then also go throughout and get some caulking and seal up the foundation, put door sweeps on, make sure that the windows are sealed up so that they don't get in. And as far as spraying them, there are a lot of insecticides that will work. But what I usually recommend to people is horticultural soap. You can go out in the morning when they've congregated and just spray them with a horticultural soap, and that'll kill them. And they will be back in a few days. Now, if you're having tons of problems with them, you can use something stronger, something like 38 plus or Tempo, that will last longer, because those the elm seed bugs can detect and they won't land where you've sprayed them. But initially, I always recommend using horticultural soap, because you're not knocking out any or very few predators and other beneficials.
But it doesn't hurt any plant life that you know of.
Well, they feed on the elm seeds.
Okay,
and
other
than that. If there are other trees with dry seeds that are available at that time, so box elder trees might be another potential thing that they could feed on. But anything with a dry seed like that elm, but Siberian elm is their primary tree.
When I told him that's what they were, he said, there are no elms in this yard. And I said, but you don't know what's in the neighbor's yard or in the field next door. I mean,
well, if people are having problems with elm seed bug, I know that they are probably living in established neighborhoods that are 30, 40, 50 years old, because these elm trees have had opportunity to establish. Mm-hmm. And so in newer neighborhoods, especially away from agricultural areas, you don't see them. And it's just more in established neighborhoods and cities where we're seeing the problems.
The good news about them is they usually are gone the second year. What is with that? What I was reading.
Well, they're cyclical. And so the seed bearing
doesn't
of the
mean
elm
you'll
trees,
have them next
it doesn't
year.
Mean you'll have them next year. And so I don't know that any local insects or animals are preying or eating these things yet, but they can be cyclical.
Oh, okay. All
so, right. Yeah, JD texted me and said he's listening. We'll give a shout out to JD. We need to get him on the air. Good morning, JD.
Thanks, JD, for listening this morning. We need to take a break. I was going to ask you something else about the elm bugs. Oh, you were telling me that this problem is a recent problem.
Yeah, they're imported. We don't know how they got here, but they're native to Europe and they're here. And so they've been spreading. And so it was about 10 to 12 years ago when we started getting calls on these mystery bugs. But the last 4 or 5 years, we just consider them established. And we deal with them very similarly to how we do the box elder bugs.
Don't smash them. They smell bad.
They do smell bad. That's a defense that they have. If you smash them, they can actually spray this nasty smelling spray on you. And if you smash them, they stink.
Okay. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Saturday morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you. Taking your calls, phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Our next texter, Ton, says, their new pumpkin starts are being eaten. The leaves look like lace. What can be eating them, and what do I use to kill it?
Well, if it's really lacy, it's probably earwigs causing the problem. And they're going to need to spray with an insecticide, something like permethrin or another garden insecticide, to see if they can kill them out. And I would do that initially if they're being torn up, but I would also put out, USU has a great fact sheet on non-pesticide options, and I would do some trapping to see if they could reduce the population.
So lacy holes, earwigs, big chunks, grasshoppers?
Yes.
Okay.
Grasshoppers play big, or play. Grasshoppers take chunky, like jagged holes to where the earwigs are more, leave the veins behind, then there's a small possibility they could have some flea beetles in there, but I think the damage sounds more like earwigs.
All right. Next person says, what type of medium-sized tree will grow in a more shaded area, if there is any?
Well, it's hard to say, because trees are trees because they want sunlight. And if they're wanting understory trees, they would probably turn back to kind of a reddish green, but choke cherries are considered an understory tree. Some of our maples, like the big tooth maples, are sometimes in the understory, or at least beginning. They would still need 5 or 6 hours of sunlight a day.
Next person says, any idea what's eating their spaghetti, squash, and zucchini?
Well, the likely candidates are earwigs, slugs, and grasshoppers. That's the best I can do, because it's not like they're a hometown buffet or a Golden Corral for just all the insects, but there's 3 or 4 possibilities.
Okay. How do they get rid of aphids in their plum tree for good so they don't keep coming back?
Cut it down.
Okay. That was brutal. Other than cutting it down, Tom.
Oh, well, if we want less, if we want cures that are less painful than...
All right.
Okay.
So trees are susceptible to aphids is what
they
you're saying?
They are.
Okay.
There's a number of aphids that get into them. But there's something that they could apply annually. There are some systemics registered for fruit trees. There's one made by BioAdvanced/Bayer. It's the same company that they could locate that is registered for many fruit trees. And you would apply that after the blossoms drop. And it'll take 6 or 8 weeks to work its way through the tree. But if you're putting the systemic down, bye-bye aphids.
The next listener says, is there any way to kill grasshoppers other than getting seagulls?
Vomiting seagulls. We have to be accurate here.
Oh.
Vomiting seagulls.
Oh, my.
So they're trying to get rid of grasshoppers. The Nolo bait wasn't available this year, and that's what we usually recommend in late spring when they first start to show up, and you're supposed to get your neighbors in on it. And if everyone in the neighborhood puts out Nolo bait, you'll have fewer grasshoppers, because they get that. It's a fungal infection that causes them to stop feeding and eventually die and not reproduce. So right now, about all they can use are insecticides, and they will probably notice that the grasshoppers are more attracted to certain plants.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd call those trap plants, although we didn't intentionally plant them for that. But then what I would do is spray those particular plants, especially if they're not edible. You know, if they're attacking the lilacs, to keep them out of your garden, sometimes you can just do what we'd call band spraying. So you spray the plants around the perimeter of your yard if they're coming in, or if they're in the yard and attracted to certain things, you would just spray those things.
All right. Maple Creek Mill wants people to know if they have burls, wood with burls in it, they will take them.
Thank you.
You were saying you were asking if there was somebody like that. And so Maple Creek Mill Wood Drying Services, they take hardwood slabs. So if anybody needs that information, there you have it. Thanks for listening this morning. Let's go to Laurie in Orem. Good morning, Laurie. How can we help you?
Hi. We had our lawn aerated in the spring. But there are parts of it, especially in the backyard, where it's just really, really hard and the water doesn't penetrate easily. I was wondering if there's a, I heard there was a product that would soften the area or make it so that water penetrated better, that maybe had iron in it too. Is this a good thing, or can you tell me what I should do about that?
They can work, but you need to reapply them periodically through the summer. So in these areas where the soil is hard and it's too shady, do you think that it's actually the shade that's preventing things from growing?
No, it's not shady.
Oh, I thought you said it was shady. I apologize.
No.
Okay. So the ground's just really hard. Have you had a soil test done to know if the texture's like clay or what's going on?
No.
Okay.
It's really rocky where we are. I know you dig down, you've got a rock everywhere.
So if you turn your sprinklers on in that area for a half hour, let's say, do you get standing water or do you have water running off the area?
It's not running off, but it doesn't seem to be doing anything. I mean,
well, when you say it doesn't do anything, what do you mean?
The grass is just dying.
Okay, so the grass is dying in those areas. And do you notice that the soil, have you checked the soil? Let's say you irrigate and you go out the next day. Have you dug to see if the water is penetrating into the soil?
No, I should do that, huh?
So what you can do, and I would say that you could just use a screwdriver, but if you've got a lot of rocks, you're going to have to get out a shovel and just very carefully work your way in. But if the soil is moist 6 inches down after you've irrigated, it's not an irrigation problem. But if you get down an inch or two and all of a sudden it's really dry, then you have irrigation problems. But it's always worth checking the soil before you start increasing irrigation or doing other things. And there could be other things going on with the lawn. So check your soil first. And if the soil after you irrigate is consistently moist down to a depth of about 6 inches, you could have a fungal disease in there or insect problems, but we need to check that soil first.
Yeah, it's just crispy to walk on.
We're getting short on time. So what I'm going to have you do is email Garden Help, just one word, gardenhelp@usu.edu. And send some pictures of it. And Meredith Seaver will pick it up, who's a horticulturist in my office, and we'll work it from there. Okay. Because this is a longer term problem.
A product called Revive that seems to help, does that?
You can try it and see if it does anything, but I would really check your soil first before you spend a lot of money.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Laurie, for your call. Next, listener Ton is in Riverton where they have secondary water. They're wondering if it's possible to plant a magnolia tree and have it flourish with secondary water.
Riverton has clay soil and they're using Jordan River water.
Maybe. They say their linden trees are really suffering.
If the lindens are suffering, I would have to have more information to know what's going on. But with a combination of the slightly salty Jordan River water and clay soil, magnolias may struggle.
Okay. Next person wants to know, when is the best time to thin out iris?
In late July, August through early September. August is when we traditionally do it.
All right. Final question before the top of the hour. How can somebody get rid of wasps?
Boy, we might need
Stand
to talk
back.
About this after
We're
the top of the...
We're going to do this after the top of the hour? Okay, it's a longer question than we have time to answer, right?
Yeah.
Someone just yelled in my ear, fire. That Dave Meekum, he's a troublemaker.
Shoot it and burn it. Those are never good recommendations,
and that did not come from you.
No.
And we are going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.